Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All right, let's get this thing moving on a Friday. 843-652-3776 is the number. Now, I had previously, in terms of on-air predictions this football season, been 11-2. I went 0-2 last night. It was an unsustainable pace. You can't stay that hot for long. And let's use a incredibly terrible broadcasting segue and say, speaking of betting... A philosophy in life that I really enjoy is betting on yourself. I really like it when people put their chips in the middle of the table and say, I don't care about the risk. This is really what I want, and I'm getting after it. And I use that phrase a lot with regard to Coastal Carolina moving up to the Sun Belt. And I like to think that's kind of how I live my life to a certain extent. I was... in 2012, finishing up school with a master's degree in something I did not want, and I found myself listening to sports radio all day long, and I was talking to one of my friends, and he said, why can't you be one of those guys on the radio? And so I just made, in that moment, I decided to bet on myself, you know, I think I could actually do that. I'm going to get after it. And I remember having a number of conversations with folks that covered sports around here in 2013 about Soxty quarterback Hunter Renfro. And he had led Soxty to an undefeated regular season. With the football in his hands, he was absolutely hell to tackle. I mean, that kid has some serious make-you-miss kind of moves, and he's very intelligent. But he did not have a college football arm, in my opinion. And I remember getting into some heated discussions with people about that. And he had some offers to go to smaller schools, Appalachian State being one of them. And no knock on App State. I mean, if you have a scholarship offered at Appalachian State, I mean, you're a pretty good football player. But he was not the kind of athlete that gets an offer from Clemson. And sometimes in the football world, people get too caught up on measurables, and they forget that someone is just actually a very good football player. And Hunter Renfro was a very, very good football player. And hats off to the Clemson staff for realizing that getting him into school as a preferred walk-on was a terrific low-risk decision. I mean, it's a school that's done a really great job of developing wide receivers over the last 5, 6, 7 years. I think we can all agree upon that. And Renfro goes in there as a wide receiver. He redshirts his freshman year. We find out a couple of months ago that he gets a scholarship. I asked last night, we were interviewing Lawton Swan from Clemson Sports Talk up in the upstate and asking him about Renfro because the guy had 5 catches for 41 yards, but it was against Wofford and it was against App State. We had no idea when the lights turned on in a big time game at the University of Louisville Thursday night, national television, whether he would actually be a guy getting meaningful snaps in a really good game. And it did not take long for Deshaun Watson to find him in the end zone.
Touchdown, Clemson, Hunter Renfro.
Very minimalist call there from Joe Tessitore. But hey, some of the guys that do TV calls really well are very minimalist. But and it was fun seeing all the reaction on Twitter, seeing a local guy making an impact on a national stage like that. And it just... not only, I wasn't surprised that he had success at Clemson, I was surprised at how quickly it happened. Because there are a lot of times people try and take a quarterback and say, okay, well, he's a great athlete, insert him into this position. Whether it's Armani Edwards trying to be an NFL wide receiver, that didn't exactly work out for him, terrific college quarterback. Tim Tebow, the Jets tried to use him kind of as an H-back, that didn't exactly work. I mean, and there are also dozens of examples of the Antoine Randall L's and Ronald Curry's and Hines Ward's of the world that were able to change positions. And Hunter Renfro, the jury's still out on long-term whether he's going to be one of those guys. And I realize those are all massive names. Those are all like seriously huge names. I'm not saying that he's an NFL player. I'm just saying it's not an easy transition, and it is says a lot about his character and his work ethic that he was able to make that transition so quickly. And it also says a lot about that young man's confidence in himself and his willingness to bet on himself. There were no doubt some people in his ear saying, hey, you know, be a big fish in a small pond. Go out there, get your scholarship offered to Appalachian State. And he said, no, I want to play at the highest level of football. I think I can do it. And he went out and did it. And it also is funny to kind of hear the code words used to describe him, right? Like, how many times is Hunter Renfrow going to get the sneaky athletic thing because he's a white guy? Or the Adam Humphries comparisons because he's white and wearing number 13, as we discussed yesterday. But as Dabo Swinney said when he was awarding the scholarship to Hunter Renfrow over the summer, don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge a book by its cover, a.k.a. white wide receiver. So congratulations to Hunter Renfrow. Really cool moment, and I always like to see people betting on themselves and succeeding. Deshaun Watson really complimented the route that he ran on that play as well.
I just seen cover two, and, you know, Hunter ran a great route, a beater, and, you know, I just, you know, threw it in, and he made a great catch and ran it in for the touchdown.
843-652-3776. Going to keep a kind of a wide open phone line throughout the course of today's show. What did you think about Clemson's win last night, as well as South Carolina being a 17-point underdog between the hedges at Sanford Stadium in Georgia this weekend? Do you think they have a fighting chance? And also room to talk about Coastal in the first ever game on the teal turf this weekend. So fun weekend of football ahead. And with regard to Clemson playing against Louisville last night, going beyond Hunter Renfrow, which obviously was a very cool moment, but beyond that, there were some interesting things. I'm not going to be one of those people that dogs Louisville and says they're a bad team because they're 0-3 and that win didn't mean anything. There are a lot of people that are probably saying, oh, well, Clemson, no, they're beating 0-3 team. Louisville was good. I mean, if you watch them last night, they have athletes, and the reason why they're 0-3 is because they actually played a legitimate college football schedule. They opened up with Auburn, and Houston's not in the Power 5, but they're athletes in the state of Texas. And I believe the guy who coaches Houston is the guy who is responsible for having three nasty quarterbacks at Ohio State, right? How is the Buckeyes offensive coordinator last year? So I have no idea how good of a team Houston's going to be for the entirety of the season, and we have no idea if Auburn's going to be 5-7 or 10-1. I would believe either of those two. But Louisville actually went out and played a legitimate schedule. They did not have an FCS opponent to warm up and get their feet wet. They did not try to find teams that they could just totally crush to start off the season. So I'm not going to feel sorry for Bobby Petrino, because he's not someone that really, you know, deserves our pity. But at the same time, I'm not saying their season's over or devaluing that win. And one thing that I thought was very interesting about the tone of this game between Clemson and Louisville is, what were the knocks of past Clemson teams over the last 4 or 5 years, the teams that always lost to South Carolina but were very good with Chad Morris running the offense and nasty skill talent, the Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins of the world? What were the knocks on them? Not physical, not going to win the line of scrimmage. South Carolina just has to control possession and run the football, and they'll force Clemson into quick three and outs. Chad Morris doesn't know how to run the football. Those are all of the things. Like, if you talk to South Carolina fans the last 3 or 4 years, all of the knocks of the way Clemson operated as an offense and why they weren't afraid of Clemson. Last night, Clemson got into a knockdown, dragout game on the road, short week, Thursday night. Their star quarterback, who has as good a chance to win the Heisman as anybody, had a bad performance. He threw 2 picks last night. An un-Watson-like performance. And what did Clemson do? They ran the ball for 202 yards and held Louisville to 19 yards. They only ran 70 plays. Now, in the Chad Morris era, everything was about tempo, tempo, tempo. Let's see if we can run 85 plays a game. Maybe it was just Louisville. Maybe it was the style of the game they played. Maybe they didn't get enough first downs to run that many plays. Too early to say that the offense has totally changed. But having a featured power back like Wayne Gallman be able to run between the tackles and knock people down and get the 5 yards when they needed it and to control the ball like that, that is a style of winning that we haven't seen from a lot of Clemson teams lately. And I think that bodes well for them for the rest of the season. Because I think that we have seen the passing game erupt with Deshaun Watson before. We have seen the quarterback be able to run the football on broken plays before. But if you have a traditional north-to-south running game added in there and a young front seven that can actually stop the run, then Clemson is very well a playoff contender. 843-652-3776. Now, as far as what Dabo had to say, Dabo kind of echoed my sentiment on Louisville and really said that's not an 0-3 team.
First of all, let me give Louisville a lot of credit. I know that they've had three very difficult losses, and that is a tough situation to be in. They had chances to win all three of the games, but they got a good football team. And they got good players, obviously got good coaches. We're very fortunate to get out of here with a win. Those guys fought. They never gave up, fought all the way to the end, and gave themselves a chance to win. So give them credit for a hard-fought game. But
and then he goes on to say that was all of the adversity that they wanted last night.
You know, at the end of the day, I'm so proud of our football team. You know, coming in this game, everybody kept asking me, what do you know about your team? What do you know about your team? And I said, well, the only thing I can tell you is we've shown up. We've competed our butts off, and but we haven't faced any adversity. And when you go on the road, you find out what type of mental toughness you have. And we had enough adversity in this game for the whole year, the whole season. We had about everything you could think of thrown at us.
And they really, that was a way more close game than you would have anticipated going down the wire. But I think you just. There was only a 3-point W, but getting out of there alive with a win, you go 3-0, and now Clemson has a long week to prepare for Notre Dame, who has a very tough home game with Georgia Tech. And they're having to practice against the option all this week, so it's almost like a different language they're going to have to learn for this upcoming week. Or they're learning this week, and they have to revert back to the normal language, taking a look at an offense that Clemson has. And it's in Memorial Stadium. The schedule sets up very nicely for them. They're in the toughest three-game stretch of their season, in my opinion, with that Louisville road game on the short week, Notre Dame, and then they have Georgia Tech at Memorial Stadium the next weekend. So they've gotten through the only road game in their tough three-game stretch. And so now they get to sit down at home, but Notre Dame and Georgia Tech currently rank number 8, number 14, tough draws. Another thing that stood out, Mackenzie Alexander is a defensive back that was getting a lot of pub before the season and certainly playing really well, but I was not ready for Tankersley to look that good. I mean, he knocked down at least three passes while I was watching, one of them an interception, looked like he was excellent in coverage. So they looked tough. I mean, that was a tough win. I mean, what you expect Clemson to be the best at, which is the high-flying passing offense, wasn't there, and they were able to win in spite of that on the road in a short week. So I thought it was pretty impressive. Now, South Carolina, a 17-point underdog to Georgia this weekend. What do you think South Carolina can do to pull this upset? There are a couple of, I don't want to say advantages, but there are a couple of interesting aspects of this game that make me think it's going to be closer than 17. I'll explain why coming up next on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Brian's spinning the club jams today. It is a Friday. Head into the weekend with a little bit of hype. Hit us up if you want to get in the mix. South Carolina, 17-point underdog. I had to do a double take because Aaron and Pat from the morning show, they hand me a sheet every week, and it's like, okay, make your picks. And I looked at that and I said, wait a second, is that supposed to be a 7 instead of a 17? Like, that is a massive line. You will not find an NFL line that big the entire season. Like, the Jaguars could be playing at New England probably, and it wouldn't be that big. So it's kind of crazy that that's where Las Vegas considers the difference between the South Carolina and the Georgia football program at Georgia when last year South Carolina was able to win. It just, to me, the perception of South Carolina since that weekend, I mean, South Carolina had already been popped by Texas A&M on opening night, but after beating Georgia last year, there was no real panic about the direction their season was going in. It's just crazy to me to think, fast forward a year from now, the state of outside perception of the program. And I mean, it's been really fashionable to see a lot of Spurrier should retire pieces this week. I mean, guys in major media outlets aren't quite doing that, but there are a lot of people like on the fringes, a lot of bloggers that are really taking shots at him. It's just kind of crazy to think that a year ago, nobody would have said that whatsoever. Now, taking a look at the matchup this weekend, there are a couple of things that I find particularly interesting. One of which, Georgia did beat Vanderbilt by 17 last weekend at home, but it was not a dominant performance. It was kind of an ugly black and blue kind of game. And Grayson Lambert was only the starting quarterback for Georgia, the Virginia transfer. By the way, he transfers to Georgia because he couldn't win the starting job at UVA. And Lambert was 11 of 21 for 116, no touchdowns. So Georgia is not really moving the ball through the air right now. So South Carolina can sell out a little bit to stop the run. Now, that's easier said than done. Georgia did put up 281 yards on 40 carries. That's pretty darn good. I mean, that is really, really good. Chubb had 189 of those. But it does look at least like the Georgia offense is pretty one-dimensional. And one thing that, and there are a couple of, if this is a close game, if South Carolina can keep this close, there are a couple of other kind of odd factors that I'm interested in. Georgia's kicker missed a 28-yard field goal, which really contributed to South Carolina winning last year, Williams-Brice. He's only 1 for 3 this year. So there are a couple of instances in this game where South Carolina might be able to get 3 points here or there that they wouldn't ordinarily if Georgia's kicker can't convert. And also, while I believe Perry Orth is their best option, I'm interested in seeing what Lorenzo Nunez can do passing. They've only used him to run out of Wildcat formations, and they haven't had him throw a pass yet. Part of me wonders if there's a home run pass on the horizon, like if there's some kind of big play coming because they haven't had him drop back to throw a pass yet. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Spurrier pull something out of his hat with regard to that. And they were able to put up 38 points on Georgia last year in Jeremy Pruitt, the defensive coordinator for Georgia's first year there. So now Spurrier's offense had a good performance against them last year. Granted, no Mike Davis, no A.J. Cann, no Dylan Thompson, no Demir Byrd. There are a lot of really good players that aren't on this year's team, but that at least is encouraging. 843-652-3776. If you have thoughts on Clemson's win last night or South Carolina's matchup with Georgia this weekend, interested in hearing your thoughts. Now also, Coastal Carolina taking on the Western Illinois Leathernecks this weekend. How about that for a matchup of nicknames? Chanticleers and Leathernecks. Won't see that anywhere else. That's not Bulldogs versus Tigers. But it's going to be a neat game this weekend because it's going to be the first game that the Teal Turf has unveiled. And I'm really interested to see what kind of effect it has. Like, I'm expecting standing room only, however many seats they have, more people to actually be in attendance. Because Coastal's ranked number one in the country. We saw an uptick in attendance last year because the community's starting to realize what a program it is. And the Teal Turf is coming out. I think that that's a recipe for a lot of people to come out and watch them. I am very, very interested in the attendance. And, of course, moving up to the FBS, that is the major hurdle. The major hurdle. I mean, going from 63 to 85 scholarships, that's fine. Coastal spends more money on athletics than all but three teams in the Sun Belt right now. The real challenge is, traditionally, not last year, but traditionally, Coastal's had a hard time filling their 9,000-person stadium. What's going to happen when you increase it to 22? So given all of the positive vibes surrounding the program, I'm really interested to see if CCU can step up its game day atmosphere, and also interested to see if that student section can be filled and can get rowdy. Because any part of developing a fan base really starts with getting your students involved, right? Those are the fans of the future. Coastal's overall enrollment has grown tremendously lately, and there has been a problem with getting students to take interest in the actual games itself, although last year that seemed to improve. But But that is, in terms of building a long-term FBS fan base, a team that can travel and put people in bowl games, that kind of thing. I mean, it starts with getting students active. So I'm interested in seeing that. Hard to really get a feel for Western Illinois. I'm just going to be straight up honest with you guys, because Western Illinois crushed an FCS school by like 30 points, and then they lost to Illinois, an FBS school, by like 30 points. They haven't really played a straight up game yet. It's hard to tell what they actually have. They're not ranked. And part of me is just like, okay, it's an FCS team. Coastal Carolina's just going to kill them. They kill everybody right now. They kill everybody that's not North Dakota State in their dome or an FBS team. I mean, that's kind of been the last couple of years of CCU football. 843-652-3776. We've got Sam on the line. Sam, what do you got for us?
Hey, man. I'm excited about the game tomorrow. Hope everyone comes out. Per one of my sources.
Okay. Is this campus, Sam, is this breaking news?
I think it's breaking news. It could be breaking news. Per one of my sources, undisclosed source.
Okay.
There were 1,500 student tickets sold in one day.
Wow.
For the opening game. I think that's a pretty big sign that we might have a big game and a big attendance coming up this weekend.
We might, Sam, we might have some Saban problems, right? You know how Nick Saban complains that they're curb stomping people and everyone's going home early? Maybe Coastal Carolina will start having the Saban problems. Like Coastal gets up big time early and the students go home, and then that wouldn't be Mowgli's style to complain about that, but that might be an issue.
All I'm saying is, make sure Bojangles is bringing plenty of chickens to the tailgate show. You know, I mean, expect a big crowd. But hey, on a real note, man, I'm excited about it. I know several people that got season tickets this year, including me and my family. I'm excited about the season. I think there's a buzz going around. I think it's going to be an awesome start off for the home crowd, especially for the to start the season off at home. Especially having four games here in a row. Having a 6 p.m. game is going to be awesome, because we get there and we get to tailgate for quite a bit. So it should be a good rowdy crowd, and I look forward to seeing everybody out there, man.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Sam, and I'll also appreciate you leading me into a station promo there. That's how you get it done. That's a quality call. The Bojangles Ultimate Tailgate Experience is going to be live in front of Springsbrook Stadium, the baseball facility. It's going to be right there on the sidewalk, so right across from the football stadium. It's going to be starting at 3 o'clock. My guy Joe Catenacci will be hosting it. I might make a special guest appearance on it. I might be there for about the first half hour, but I'm getting called up to the Chanticleer Sports Network for the Coastal Carolina pregame show, because Aaron is out of town this weekend. So I'll be serving double duty, most likely, on the tailgate show for a little bit, and then the Chanticleer Sports Network after that. But the best part about the Bojangles Ultimate Tailgate Experience is the first word there, right? 3 o'clock, we'll be out there. Bojangles will be making a delivery at some point during that two-hour show between 3 and 5 o'clock. So don't miss out on your free Bojangles. Also, good to mention that that's 3 hours before kickoff that we have Chanticleer coverage. So if you're a big CCU fan, starting at 3 o'clock, and then, of course, the game broadcast, which Joe Cashin and Lane Harris do such a phenomenal job with, as always, that'll be right here on 100.3 The Team at 6 p.m.
Talking about attendance, your boy Ryan Young tweeted that over 3,000 student tickets have been claimed already, according to the director of tickets.
So 1,500 in one day and 3,000 overall. If you're looking to fill the 9,000-person stadium, filling it one-third with students, that's a nice way to start.
It says the Bryant game the following week is already standing room only.
Brian, CCU alum over here, do you know how many students in general go to Coastal Carolina? Do you know total enrollment?
I think someone told me the other day it's up to 13 now.
I knew it was over 10 grand. I didn't know the exact number. So three of them out there, that's a pretty strong, strong.
Hey, when I used to go to games, and that's only in 2008, there was like maybe 100 people. So that's quite an improvement.
Look, I mean, we played the cheesy Field of Dreams clip over and over again when they joined the Sun Belt. If you build it, he will come. And I think we saw that to a certain extent last year, not just the move to the FBS, but when people realized in year three of Moglia, how much they were winning, how they were winning, how exciting and dynamic their offense was. And in general, there hasn't been much about this program to not be proud of, right? I mean, we haven't seen any headlines of guys getting into trouble. And they play hard on every snap. Like, if that clip we played on Monday of Moglia being livid about their penalties against South Carolina State, they were winning 32-0. So you might not be entertained if you think the score is 32-0, but that coach on the sideline, he's going to be making sure the guys play 100% every snap, and that's how those guys are graded out. They're not graded out on their end win and loss. I mean, they go into a game understanding that all they have is Coastal Carolina's A-plus game, right? If they're playing against an opponent that's just flat-out better than them, which is unlikely in their regular season, but if they're in that kind of game and they lose by a point, but everybody brings their A-game, that's what they got. Now, their A-game wasn't 32-0 against South Carolina State, which is crazy. South Carolina State competes for the MEAC championship every year. They were in the FCS playoff in 2013. So, kind of crazy that's where Coastal Carolina is.
I wonder what kind of spreads Coastal would be getting if they were some bets going down on those games. They'd be pretty high.
Yeah, one of my buddies texted me the other day, and he said the best part of Coastal Carolina moving to the FBS now is we get consistent lines on them. Just got a text from Cody Bays in media relations for Coastal Carolina. Right now, enrollment is 10,127. So not quite 13 grand. Maybe that includes grad students, Brian. But
yeah, when the person told me that, I thought that was pretty high. But
if you're expecting 30% of your undergrads to show up for a game, that's massive. I mean, that is a really strong turnout, especially for a school that just a year ago was having meetings. How do we get students more involved? How do we get them more interested in athletics? So I think it's an overall good sign. 843-652-3776. Thoughts on Clemson's W? South Carolina going into Georgia this weekend, how they can possibly pull off the upset. Perhaps, like Sam, you're heading out to Coastal Carolina. What are your thoughts on the new teal turf and that game against the Leathernecks this weekend? And we're also going to throw down our top games of the week. That's coming up next on 100.3 The Team. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Facebook.com/1003TheTeam. One of the ways you can hit us up on social media. If you want to post throughout the show or you want to comment on some of our posts, definitely do that. One thing that we are doing each and every week is an offering of 6 games, 3 pro and 3 college with the lines, and you are competing against me, Aaron, and Pat from The Drive. And if you beat all of us, you win a prize. Like if we lay an egg and we go 2-4, like, I went 0-2 last night. That doesn't count. That's just kind of, you know, me doing something on a Thursday. But this, our games of the week, if you beat us, you'll win some prizes. We'll hook you up. Definitely let us know if you beat us on the page, and Aaron will reach out to you telling how you get your prize. But we got 6 games this week. Starting out in college, we got Georgia Tech at Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, very interesting to me. Not only are they trying out a new quarterback, but they are not actually in the ACC, but they can really, really disrupt the ACC in terms of teams and their aspirations for the playoffs, which wouldn't that kind of be ironic if Notre Dame and its partial ACC membership ends up being the spoiler that keeps an ACC team out of the playoff? Well, they're playing Georgia Tech and Clemson in back-to-back weekends. But Notre Dame looked really rough against Virginia last week. They had some serious issues with discipline on defense, and what's the one thing you need playing against Georgia Tech? Discipline on defense. As Moglia will say when they get ready to play Charleston Southern this year, how many practices you have to get ready for the option. So I hate this. I hate taking a road favorite like Georgia Tech because Georgia Tech is giving 3 points, but I am going to take Georgia Tech -3 in that one. Ole Miss and Alabama. This is my favorite game this weekend. My absolute favorite game. Ole Miss has 5 guys that could potentially be first-round picks on that team. Ludicrously talented. But they also beat Alabama last year, and Nick Saban is 9-1. Against teams after he's lost to them at Alabama. Granted, he's only lost to Alabama like I'm not going to say 10 times because he hasn't played every team again immediately after he's lost to them. Could have lost in a bowl game. Anyways, so Saban, definitely the revenge factor is pretty strong here. But Ole Miss, I'm very, very intrigued to see Chad Kelly out there. You guys will remember him as Mr. Swag Kelly, the guy who got tossed from Clemson for yelling at coaches during the spring game and accusing them of rigging the quarterback competition for Cole Stout. And the reason why they had to burn the red shirt off of Deshaun Watson, otherwise he would not have used any eligibility last year. Well, he, after a just video game type season in junior colleges last year where he threw like 800 touchdowns, he's resurfaced at Ole Miss. He is in the Heisman conversation because they played 2 garbage teams early on. But the guy's had like nearly 600 yards through the air and a ton of touchdowns. So I'm interested to see how he does against a legit defense. And people talk all the time about Saban teams struggling against dual threat quarterbacks, but I just think college defenses in general struggle against dual threat quarterbacks. But it is going to be interesting to see Ole Miss, their tempo, Laquon Treadwell, Chad Kelly, all of that talent that they have, how that's going to match up with Alabama. And Alabama is giving 7 points at home. I think as talented as Ole Miss is, the fact that we've seen Ole Miss beat them last year, Ole Miss is very dynamic on both sides of the ball. Don't forget about Robert Kimdichie. I mean, they're good. I just don't see Alabama beating them by more than 7. So I'm going to take Ole Miss plus 7 in that one. South Carolina and Georgia, I'm just simply going to say Georgia does not pass the ball well, and 17 points is a lot. I mean, honestly, like, think about this scenario. Georgia could be winning by 23 points in the fourth quarter and just totally be dominant, have all their ones out of the game. South Carolina could hit a late touchdown. Boom, it's 16. It is so hard to beat a team by 17. It is really, really hard. I mean, you have to care. Like Mark Richt, who's a very nice man, a sweet man, he would really have to want to murder Spurrier to beat them by 17. I'd be astonished. Just no more analysis than that. South Carolina plus 17. Thank you very much. That number's too big. Moving on to the pros, Texans at Panthers. That one is Panthers favored by 3 at home, and grudgingly, I'm going to take the Panthers. Like, I think we could see like a 12-6 kind of game. I think this is going to be disgusting. I'm not sure I want to watch it. I'm terrified of J.J. Watt coming after Cam Newton as a Panthers fan. But on the other side of the football, Houston starting Ryan Mallett, Alfred Blue as their running back. Aside from DeAndre Hopkins, they have nothing on that offense that inspires any kind of confidence. And the Panthers' defense is very salty, as we know. So if I'm looking at a knockdown, drag-out, black and blue style of game, I have a little more confidence in Cam Newton. It might look awful. It might look ugly to will the ball downfield, make plays with his legs, find Greg Olsen. Got to target him more than 2 times this week, but I'm going to take Panthers minus 3. Patriots at Bills. Patriots favored by 2 in this one on the road. And this is a tough one. I mean, I really love as dynamic as the Bills looked. I mean, they have athletes all over the field. And we've seen with Rex Ryan, typically when he comes into a place, there's a lot of enthusiasm for the way that he operates. Players love him. Like, I could see the Bills absolutely winning this game, but the Patriots also look pretty darn good against the Steelers. So I'm just gonna say we're gonna see a Tyrod Taylor regression this weekend, because that's the easy comment to make, right? That's the easy thing for Sports Talk guy to say. I don't have the balls to pick a Bills win here or a Bills cover. So I'm gonna take the Patriots minus 2. Seahawks at Packers, 3.5 for the Pack. At Lambeau, I don't love that number. That hook is weird. I don't like that at all. I think the Seahawks are going to be in a lot of these games this year that their offensive line isn't great. I just think they're going to be in a lot of these games where Russell Wilson can make throws late and just get close. The more I think about this one, I hate it more, but I did pick Green Bay early this morning when Pat hassled me, so I'll keep that. They're at Lambeau. And Seattle, it's hard for me to imagine Seattle starting out 0-2, right? They made back-to-back Super Bowls. It's a long season, though. I think I'm going to take Green Bay 3.5 here, even though
that's
I hate
what happens when your players hold out.
Yeah, that's not getting talked about enough.
And now Bennett's saying he wants money.
think about this. Think about how much publicity Dez Bryant's non-holdout was getting because he introduced the idea of holding out. I don't know if it's because who Dez Bryant is and because it's Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. That certainly has something to do with it. But you would think, as good a player as Chancellor is on a team that's played in back-to-back Super Bowls, that his holdout, I mean, we haven't seen a guy miss games like this in a long time. I mean, guys hold out in training camp all the time. Darrell Revis is master of the shakedown, right? Like, when was the last time Darrell Revis went to training camp? Aside from year one of a contract when he's just shook somebody down. I mean, that guy has leveraged his talent into getting a new deal like almost every year of his entire career. Must have a great agent. Also, he's the best corner in the game, or one of them, so that helps. But that is fascinating to me how they handle that, because at some point, like, dude, you got 3 years left on your deal. Like, that's not even close to the end of it.
He's just losing money, game check after game check.
Yeah, that's... That's ballsy on both sides, really. I mean, I guess Seattle doesn't really have that much of a choice, because if they say, okay, Cam, we'll redo your deal and give you a ton of money, then all of a sudden Bennett's like, you know, see this mouth, feed it.
You think he's cheering for the Packers this weekend? So he's like, look, you guys are terrible without me.
Give me
a new contract.
I would hope not. I mean, I'm not naive. I bet some guys certainly have that in their psychology. But I would hope. I mean, if you're on a team, Brian, that plays in back-to-back Super Bowls, like, you have to love your teammates. Like, you have to love success, man. I know at the same time it's probably weird if they have no problems without you or someone steps into your role. Like, how much more delicious would that Drew Bledsoe-Tom Brady situation have been if it wasn't injury, it was a contract holdout, and Tom Brady went to the Super Bowl? Yeah. That would be the only way to make the Brady story even better. But also, my death pool pick, for what it's worth, New Orleans. Take that home team going up against Tampa. Tampa's miserable. Jameis is going to get picked off a ton this year. He is.
I think it'll make a big difference with Mike Evans out there.
Rob Ryan, New Orleans defensive coordinator, he's going to throw the kitchen sink at Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston isn't going to know
awful
it hit him.
Last week.
Arizona's a good team.
Yeah.
It's one thing to lose to Arizona by two touchdowns. It's another to get dominated by Tennessee. Okay? Like, I think the Bucs are bad. Those head-to-head games the Panthers have with the Falcons, very important this year, both in the second half of the season. I think that it's going to take a gritty 8-8, 9-7 kind of deal to win the NFC South this year. I don't think it's a good division.
Julio is looking nice, but who do you think is going to win between Manziel and Mariota?
Give me Mariota.
Yeah?
I'm serious,
you're buying,
man,
the hype?
I told you. I'm sticking to my guns. Now, Peyton got a little back on track last night, but visually it was awful still. And he threw the pick six. His balls are still fluttering. He's... Don't laugh at that. That was a serious football comment, Brian. I don't appreciate that. good gracious, live radio. He doesn't have zip anymore, and I know he hasn't had it for a while, but his brain and his timing with his receivers has to be perfect to, like, make an 8-yard completion. Like, it just looks way too difficult to me. And we've seen him really fade down the stretch last season. If he has that same level of regression from where he's starting this year, the end's going to be terrible.
Yeah, he's lucky the defense came through last night.
Yeah, his boy that stood up for him, the other Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall stripped Jamal Chuck, causing a lot of fantasy groans last night.
We must be good luck. We talk about you on the show, and you do good, Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, by the way, so I was 0-2 on picks last night, but I did throw in there that last question, that conversation about Renfrow with Leighton Swan of Clemson Sports Talk, and then Renfrow immediately. And by the way, we made that a show promo. And then Renfrow caught the touchdown like an hour later. So we are good luck for him. We are good luck for Mr. Renfrow. We'll take all the credit in the world for that.
We'll take a stipend once it gets to the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait till... See, you're going to tell when Hunter Renfrow gets really good at football, when they stop comparing him to Adam Humphries and they start comparing him to Wes Welker.
Like, God.
White wide receiver can't be compared to anything other than white wide receiver. So when he starts getting the Wes Welker and Jordy Nelson comps, that's when you know Renfro's starting to do his job. That's when you know he's starting to make it to the next level.
Definitely.
843-652-3776. How'd you feel about Clemson W last night? Thoughts on South Carolina's upcoming game with Georgia this weekend? Coastal's home opener on the Teal Field. We'll let you in the mix on all of those subjects. Do a little buy or sell next. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson, hanging out with you guys as we do each and every Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. Miss anything? Hit us up on TeamMyrtleBeach.com, drop down podcast. Listen to us after the fact. Brian gets that done after every show. Susan tweets at me, at Lou Woodard, OMG, I totally laughed at that. You know what? Guys, I thought we could have a serious discussion about football on this show. And apparently saying Peyton's fluttering balls, apparently that elicits laughter out of the audience. Or at least Brian and Susan.
Yeah,
Too much for you, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the way you,
Brian,
approached
you
it.
I approached it with academic seriousness, with all of the respect in the world to Peyton's fluttering balls. And it's not my problem that you guys have a very immature sense of humor. All right? I'm trying to conduct my job over here. And if my job entails saying Peyton's fluttering balls, then that's what I should be able to say, Brian.
I guess.
No. You can try to see how many times I can say that in one segment. No, I'm done with that. I don't like killing jokes.
You apologize?
on occasion, I will apologize if I kill a joke. Now, man, you totally knocked me off track. There was a story that we're going to get to buy or sell here in a minute, but there is a story that came out today that has a lot of people really concerned about the future of football. And there are like 10 uber cliche sports radio topics, like, is Tim Tebow a professional quarterback? Does Pete Rose belong in the Hall of Fame? And I just feel like the, you know, alarm sound football is going to die and soccer's going to replace it kind of sports radio topic, that gets overplayed. And I mean, I do think that soccer will grow in this country over time, but I think that the main problem it has is that the best players in the world don't play in America, right? Basketball, football, baseball, the best league in the world, hockey, it's all here. And soccer, if our players get really good, they play in different time zones, like at like 8 a.m. It's like when you watch the Premier League. So,
or they play basketball or football.
Right. I mean, I think that's the biggest problem that soccer's facing in terms of eating up market share in terms of kids playing sports or paying attention to sports. But football, this is actually really alarming. There were 91 brains that were donated of deceased NFL players studied by Boston University. 91 of them. 87 had CTE. 87 had the degenerative concussion brain disorder known as CTE, which has really been linked to depression, suicides, you know, violent behavior in NFL players after they've gotten done with their career. And that's really sad to see. And it is worth mentioning that there are more precautions in terms of diagnosing and preventing players that are concussed from getting back into games. Like Luke Kuechly might not play this weekend against Houston. And I think this study really puts it into context why Panthers fans shouldn't necessarily be itching to see their middle linebacker back on the field. Now, I don't know if there were a third-party doctor watching all of these guys for their entirety of their football careers. Again, it can't just be blamed on the NFL. I mean, how many times are those guys lining up at age 12 years old and their coach was in their grill telling them to be tough, to be a man, right? I mean, that probably happened a lot. You can't just say that's all on the NFL. You know, I mean, how many sub-concussive hits did they take on the line of scrimmage? If they're NFL players, they probably played 20 years of football in their life.
Well,
right.
They had another stat that was like, out of anyone that's played any level of football from high school on up, semi-pro, college, NFL, whatever, it's like out of 160 of them, 130 of them had the same diagnosis. So that's pretty crazy. Just like you could play a few years of high school football and still be.
Well, and the other thing is we don't know what positions the brains played. Those guys who donated their brains to science after their families did after they died, we don't know if the four brains that didn't have CTE were like kickers, right? I mean, we literally don't know. I mean, they could be like place kickers. I mean, it could be that everybody that played in the line of scrimmage in the NFL had CTE or has some form of it now, and that would be really frightening. But youth participation in football has not declined faster than the rate of overall youth participation in other sports. Now, this is key because a lot of people will pull out an ESPN study that happened in 2013, and they said all of the news regarding concussions had caused youth football to decline based, you know, 10%. Well, the participation rate in sports across the board is down 10% because there's increased specialization early on. Like, kids get in a travel team for one sport, and that's what they have to focus on. So somebody 10 years ago that would have played basketball and football is on an AAU basketball team instead of playing football. That's why football participation is going down. There's nothing to say that all of this shocking and, you know, informative research on concussions, there's nothing to say that that's really impacted youth football.
And I think in regards to the future of the sport, I mean, you kind of touched on it with Luke Kuechly, they're taking a lot more precautions now, obviously, which seem to be helping, because I forgot who made the comment, but they said back in his day when he was playing, if he got hit like Luke Kuechly did, he would have been out there and like another two players or something. So obviously they're doing a lot more to prevent this from happening. So if they continue at this rate, the rates obviously would drop.
You know what the problem is? Well, we don't know, obviously, Brian. Whoa. I mean, we really don't know. And the problem is, what's it going to take, 40 years? As morbid as that is, until Luke Kuechly dies and you take a look at his brain and you're like, he doesn't have CTE, must have been the Panthers rested him against the Texans. Right? I mean, it's a very alarmingly high number. And at the same time, everyone wants to say football is heading on the track of boxing, because boxing with Ali and Foreman and Frazier, culturally it was enormous. It's never been enormous in my lifetime. Like, I was like a small child when Mike Tyson in Las Vegas was like a huge deal, when that was on football's level of popularity. Like, since then, it hasn't been up there. I watched Mayweather-Pacquiao because that was a cultural event. That's happened one time in the last 10 years, right, where there's been a fight where everybody had to be there. I mean, Mayweather-De La Hoya didn't seem that big. I mean, the reason, in my opinion, that boxing has been struggling is because you can't get to it, right? I mean, how many kids will watch football on Sunday and Saturday, but if they want to watch a good boxing match, they got to have their parents pay $70. I mean, I think that's a big reason why boxing has declined, but that's not exactly my specialty. I'm sure a lot of people could, you know, I'm sure a lot of people could get at me about that. But there are a lot of these fights that I would watch if I didn't have to pay $70 for them. I mean, if it was part of my cable bill, you better believe I would watch. I would watch Mayweather-Berto. I wasn't going to pay $70 for some patsy that Mayweather was going to preserve his undefeated streak against. That was like Alabama's undefeated in the last game of their season instead of Auburn is like Western Carolina. It's like, okay, have fun watching that game. They're, you know, they're going to finish their regular season undefeated. Now, in terms of buying and selling, I am going to buy South Carolina getting inside the number. I don't see there's any way that Georgia beats them by more than 17. I'm buying South Carolina plus 17. I don't think Georgia moves the ball through the air. 17 is a massive number, so I don't want to call anything free money and have people coming after me after they lose things. But, I mean, looking at that, I might have to get in on that action. And then what am I selling? I am selling Alabama covering as well. I'm selling Alabama beating Ole Miss by more than 7 points in Bryant-Denny Stadium in Alabama. I think Ole Miss is very talented, and if Chad Kelly can keep his head straight, which is saying something, he created adversity in the spring game for himself because Chad Morris called a punt on 4th and 5 at like midfield, and he said they were rigging it for Cole Stout and started screaming at his coaches. Chances are there's going to be a little more adversity playing against a Nick Saban coach team and Bryant Denny, but if he can keep his stuff together, I think they're going to give Bama some problems. I really do. I mean, I know they played garbage teams, Ole Miss has, but when you have back-to-back weeks scoring 70 points, that means you're good, right? I mean, it's one thing to have a weak schedule, but when you're beating teams like 70-5, like, you're legit. I mean, the other team has people on scholarship. Not as good as yours, but they at least are out there trying to prevent you from basically doing a walkthrough and just running your plays. So anybody that can get to 70 points in any game, I'm impressed by that. Buy or sell, brought to you by philanthropist.com, helping you get great domain names. Teal turf this weekend. The surf turf. I like the surf turf better than the surf in turf. Like, I don't think you make it a verb. I think you make it a double noun. The surf turf. I'm wondering if Joe Cashin has any puns saved up for the radio broadcast. Surfing out there on the turf. Like, I wonder if that's going to come into play.
I hope to keep me entertained if they keep blowing out schools by 30.
By the way, Coastal, one thing that stood out to me against South Carolina State last weekend, there's not much of a drop-off after Hop Henderson. And he's nasty. He might be the best running back in the FCS. But Oshamar Abercrombie, he has some moves. Coastal Carolina, in addition to having a great quarterback in Alex Ross, has two really nasty running backs. Can't wait to see those guys get turned loose in the teal turf this weekend against Western Illinois. Coverage for that begins here tomorrow at 3 p.m. Game kickoff at 6. Stay right here for all of the Chanticleer action. Sports Talk coming up next. Corn Blute, McCreary.